and times it up and times it down. Civilizations like the Egyptians went into the desert, gone. And so if cosmic historians look for a moment, look at the last 6,000 years, and it says values, everybody's happier.
The problem seems to me that, again, in cosmic terms, 6,000 years is
much.
Exactly, it's nothing.
But that doesn't mean that we, since we are so short in existence, are irrelevant.
No,
question is that if the process can be carried on, then all those things are going to become very relevant, and they're going to explain themselves, and they're going to have a very specific, clear niche by which they see themselves part of this process. Maybe we are too impatient.
I think you're right, Paul. I think in the long in the future, pie in the sky, we will get there. But I think in this particular century, the next one may be pretty bloody awful.
Yeah, well, pie in the sky, I accept the long way in the future, but I don't accept pie in the sky, because pie in the sky seems to be saying, yeah, but after all, it's not going to happen. We don't know if it's going to happen, because the little amoeba couldn't believe that this really would happen ever. There was an incapacity in the little creature to imagine that something more than its own reality would ever exist. So we should maybe realize and be humble enough to realize that as little amoebas of today, we cannot really pretend to know that that's a pie in the sky.
Correct.
We better perhaps have a different fate.
My metaphor is
a result of a process which had fate in itself.
I think the last 6,000 years are not that insignificant.
No.
I think particularly if we take our venture seriously, because we are here to build and perfect yet another container, yet another instrument through which we think human spirit will be nurtured and developed. And if so, the last 6,000 years are immensely important, for it is taking care of them that we look at ourselves, for it is during the last 6,000 years that civilizations have been nurtured and developed in the cities. And therefore, if our metaphor is that history is the evolution of matter from matter to supermatter via appropriate instruments, those instruments during the last 6,000 years were cities, and if these 6,000 years are not so important, our venture may be not important. And since our venture is important, therefore I conclude as a logician once that the last 6,000 years were important.
It's not a matter of it not being important, I think. I think that's probably an extreme statement that it's not important. The thing is that you see it's hard to be in the middle of a system and see where it's going.
That's very true.
And that's where we are. It's hard for us to know that right now we're orbiting in three different directions, and we've recently discovered that the whole Milky Way galaxy is moving at 1,000,000 miles an hour in some direction, besides all the other orbits we're in. And we sit here and we feel very stable, you know, because we don't see all that, and because we're in the middle of it.
But what does that have to do with moral values?
I think it does because the assumption I make is that consciousness is a divine attribute. And it's not perfection, but it's a divine attribute. Then I'm asking myself, well, why do I have the right to be consciousness, and that cliff doesn't have the right to be consciousness? So eventually, consciousness has to be
as an ethical basis. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Again, it's justice, and it's justice in terms of the ultimate supreme condition,
which is just Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. What's it got to do with time point?
Because Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is a particle of this divinity, which someone has developed in the technology.
The
technology of the creature called Beethoven, the technologies of instrumentation which Beethoven had to use in here.
Also
there's
instruments.
Plus, you're
watching. Really, I mean, this is really, to cover everything by what we do as technology. Our physiology is technology too. And then, spray, my my logician again is in me is protesting. If we have the term that is such a large umbrella that it covers everything, it is probably empty of meaning.
The only term
is so large that it covers everything, it is empty of meaning.
Define a physiological world.
It is something that goes through me, which takes care of all the processes that need to be taken care of and of which I am not aware.
It's the technology of flesh.
You are again improving in my territory, your values and my conceptions.
Turn it around, cement it as much as
possible. Biology is not technology. I'm sorry.
It's biotechnology.
You are twisting my semantic arm.
What about the players out here?
That's okay. because he has not reached perfection, and because the divine will not create the imperfect. That's right. But yet, later, you said that, well, first of all, each moment has the divinity, and that consciousness is a divine attribute. And I think that we are semi-conscious at least, and therefore we must have some divinity.
Sure.
No,
we have to realize it, we have to make it tangible, we have to go home to that.
So we have
the rules here, which is one more basis, which attempts to develop itself into a grown-up, full-fledged, divine substance. So there is no contradiction. The contradiction is in believing that there is a full-grown creature that has the need of making embryos out of itself. Thank you.
You know, he asked me a question, and then we got into quite a discussion about some of the things that Dr. Bruce asked, but he mentioned the thing about now that we have all this great technology and so on, and all this information stacked around, we have nothing to say. And I wanted to make a small comment on that point of view. We certainly have a lot to say, and what we have to say is that evolving around us is something that we are all becoming aware of, and as we become aware of it, we participate in it. And what is it? Well, it's the fact that there is a better kind of an existence for the kind of amoebas we are or something. You know, we evidently have some kind of an awareness, maybe it's this divinity kind of thing or something, that it is possible that there is something beyond where we are that we could participate in that might be better, you know, that might be a little more fulfilling or something. I think that's what motivates a lot of us. That's why we create environments and things. Otherwise, what's the alternative? The alternative is to say there isn't anything. And so if there isn't anything, why bother? You know, why don't we lay down our tools and not try to much influence the future? We have to have a commitment, and I think ingrained in us is some kind of a commitment. So one of the tools we have to gather data is the computer. And the computer, with the computer, we've taken all this information that Dr. Bruce talked about, and it's been almost irrelevant. It's just information, and information is useless. But gradually, if you can take information and make it available in different arrays, if you can take all of the possibilities that may exist that affect a particular action, you can start doing things with information that is creative. And certainly now, that is one of the things that technology, one of the things that modern computerization can do. It's taking information and presenting it to us and doing it for us and giving us then the freedom and the opportunity to be creative with it. We used to be so busy accumulating that darn stuff, you know, that we were exhausted by the time we got it accumulated and had no time to use our creative powers to try and force it together into a synthesis. And the computer is doing all of the tedious calculations for us now. You know, our children go to school, they don't have to learn, they don't have to add things anymore. They can push a little pocket computer and get their answers, and so on. And so quickly, we do have available something that will do the tedious kind of routine, sort of, in the past, human kinds of actions for us, to free us, to present to us information and allow us to use that information freely and creatively in terms of moving ourselves ahead to something that's a little higher synthesis and a little more fulfilling than what we have today. So, you know, because I'm an advocate of technology because I'm in it, and so I feel like Paulo does too, that, you know, maybe computers is a mutation, and maybe that mutation will die through the process of evolution, and time will tell. It may very well be that you know, nature evolution is very inefficient sometimes, and some mutations just, they absolutely don't work out. Maybe the computer's a dinosaur. And maybe give or take another 100 or 200 years, people look back and say, wow, what a nightmare that was. Maybe not. And the only way we find that out is to work it through and give it a chance, watch it through time, see if it does become a valuable tool. It may or it may not. That's the way it goes.
Careful when one tries to represent other people. I think anthropocentrism is a shadow of our existence. So when I will talk on behalf of third world nations, I'll probably talk on behalf of myself too. I think that there is a great deal of ambiguity and confusion among third world nations, for they are all mesmerized by the power of our gadgets. And this is the condition of all human beings in this world. Somehow our propaganda, the images we have projected, are so powerful that even if they have best reasons to somehow resist our goodies, they are irresistibly drawn to them. And this is something that is, that defies logic. That is proposition number one. Proposition number two, which really is, correlates with the first one, that it is not only adults but children who are already influenced by our conception of life, wealth, and technology. For it seems that even among third world nations where information technology has reached them, where they have TV and other things, when kids are asked to draw their home, their house, invariably they come up with a kind of colonial thing with two car porches. It is really incredible, taking into account their culture. Well, I think that the answer will very much depend on whom do you talk to. I think the people who have done best in Africa particularly are the Tanzanians. And they tried various, they started first accepting everything that we have offered them, starting with medicine, high power medicine, consultant specialists. And they found that their main hospital was devouring 90 to 95% of their resources. Of the medical resources, of 95% of the financial resources for medicine, and then found that only 3% of people could use it. So they really changed the whole idiom. Now they have gone very much along Chinese lines. Small units in every village, then bigger units in districts, and still bigger units in bigger districts, and one central hospital. And in this case, medical care is really available to almost everybody. And one would have to talk for quite a while in order to show how, in spite of the fact that their personally is not right, for they take often people with fifth or sixth grade education between the age of 14 and 16, and for 4 years they really condition them to a very narrow way of recognizing certain diseases. And they become very expert at recognizing certain standard diseases, although their medical knowledge is very small. As a result, they can recognize most current diseases in about 5 to 7 minutes, while it takes well-trained doctors 12 to 14 minutes. But there is another reason. They are not well-trained, and therefore they do not have high aspirations beyond what they accomplish. So their basic education is minimal, you may say, and then on the top of it, specialization. And they are very happy to be of use. It is really turning tables altogether. And recently they have done it with their education. They have found that following what was best in education, they have been training their people to do very abstract, very specialized tasks, which are of little use for their country. And then they went back to combine work, education with work, and then finally they have tried to recreate their old cultural pattern by introducing ritual, dancing, singing as a part of education, as a part of total upbringing. And in this way, I think implicitly, they quite departed with the most specialized, with the most sophisticated goodies we can provide them with. You see, I think that history will tell us which departures are correct. But just thinking about the computer, I was asking myself, all right, given all the resources, all the time, I have, a number of other people have, let us try to make computer the most compassionate, the most humanistic instrument we want to make of it. How would we go about it? We'll probably go by trying to redesign new functions for it, trying to find what are our most precious assets in thinking, most difficult problems in solving, and probably we'll try to redesign the whole beast according to different lines, because it will be not economic or arithmetic operation that will be of importance, but those more analogous tasks. And as a result, we may have come up with something quite different than the computer, reflecting our values and our goals. And consequently, I still insist that there is a certain value scale built in the computers, the value of the quantitative world, the value of yes-no answers, the value of those things that make efficiency great in industry and make our quantitative economics work. But those other values have not yet been proven, particularly if you take the last 10 years, and there were great promises attached to computers. They were going to be the greatest chess champions. They are going to talk to us better than Shakespeare. They are going to acquire a linguistic capability. I think those more subtle tasks are already now off the agenda. The promise has not been fulfilled. Those things that would make them more interesting as human analogs. And consequently, if I were about designing a task for them, I might have ended up with altogether a different instrument, so different that the term computer might not apply. And this would be creating new technology, not by trying to infuse new goals to existing technology, by trying to create new technology according to new goals and values. And I think that if the third world nations really followed it all, they might have opted it on this option. My answer is already long enough, but what is happening among third world nations is the realization that some of the newest implement that we brought to them have catastrophic results. For example, the introduction of our plows and other devices. And consequently, in order to progress, they go back by reinventing medieval tools, which brings them back to a certain wholeness of their ecological habitats and enables them to evolve in a new way by respecting what is immediately given to them and going with nature, not against it.
Yeah, you are talking about the right timing now, which evidently is very essential. But you're not talking, you're really rejecting technology. You're saying that technology has to be appropriate. And naturally, nobody can reject that. Everything has to be appropriate. Mm-hmm. Even a monster would say that. appropriateness is the right thing to do. I follow you through the computer thing up to a point, and I agree totally with you, but then you said that the computer is failing. The computer is not failing, it's just developing, I think.
No, in terms of predictions made some 15 years ago, that at this age time the computers would do this and that. Quite confident and arrogant predictions.
We are arrogant by definition, and the more we know, the more we think we know, the more arrogant we become. But that doesn't mean that the computer, which is not arrogant, is just a piece of machinery.
Hello, I thought that we are compassionate by definition, not arrogant by definition. You are disappointing me.
No, but
there's a certain arrogance in saying that the computer has failed, it seems, because the computer is 40 years
ago. It's less than that, you know, it's been really more like 20 years that people have been using computers, and the use of computers is in its infancy. And we're certainly evolving right now to where we can address computers with a human voice, for example, and maybe do some of the things you're talking about. But I'm not searching for anything in the computer world. I don't think anybody is with the tools of mankind to take over and do for us our creative thinking. There's absolutely no attempt to do that. It's quite the contrary. It's to provide us with tools, just as we have tools here today, to make it more optimum for us to do creative thinking.
Well, I'm delighted with this new modest approach and reappraisal of computers' capacity in handling it all. For there was, about 10 years ago, 6 years ago, an euphoria that...
Sure there was.
Precisely. And consequently, you can really pick up statements, and they showed you that in 20, 30 years' time, you will be totally dispensable.
That's not the fault of the computer, it's the fault of the people.
I think I'm making a more interesting point. The presumption was based on the anticipation of certain capacity of the tool, and then we found the capacity of the tool was lacking, and consequently, it was perhaps not the arrogance of the people, but a lack of realization that the instrument was not made for certain purposes with which it was endowed, such as chess playing, which requires much more than mere calculation.
It seems to me that there again, we are shortening the development potential in the second century short. We don't know what the computer eventually can be 50 years from now. Probably we'll have another name.
I'm sure we'll admit that automobiles, the first couple of years, they probably made statements about, you know, how great we'd whiz through time at 1,000 miles an hour or something. But then there's the practical world of getting there. I think humanness tends to do that. You know, thank heaven that it does, that we try to see things maybe ahead and then reach for it. And that's how we do things.
You see, I want to invent a computer which goes beyond computer. And the first thing I want to drop is computer. It has to do with computation.
Yeah.
I want to have analogs for human genius, and I'll call them genuites. And I think if you start with this premise, you have an altogether different scenario. And you mentioned in passing the automobile. I think this may be a good and useful example for the automobile, in spite of its 60 years, did not improve beyond its original premise. If anything, it brought about certain unresolved agonies, if not disasters. So it has to be careful in saying that all technologies will perfect themselves and deliver something that was not originally in them.
Henrik, I'd like to ask you, in view of your statements that Western technology was designed as an instrument of furthering Western values, how would you respond to McLuhan's idea that electronics is really the means of tribalizing the planet and it's a fundamental change in Western society?
First, for me, McLuhan is all right. And tribalizing, I think, was a good slogan. And I think that when we look at the rate with which many cultures have been wiped out, we really don't want to tribalize the planet, because tribalization means homogenization in Western patterns. It means really extinguishing many cultures or making them so much like ourselves that the distinction and specificity of cultures and diversity of cultures disappear.
Are we like ourselves? The end of all that?
Well, that's a good question. But I think that tribalization through electronic media really meant homogenization of other civilization culture in the Western image. And I think that we are now becoming wiser and not to try to do it. And indeed, we are trying to make ourselves like other culture, more less homogeneous, more heterogeneous, more diverse, less linear, and perhaps more inconsistent.
Does that apply to the book?
Which one?
To printing. Was printing a revolution?
We see.
Or was printing another one of those technologies which allowed the mind of man to develop itself?
I think it was the latter. When I think about the first printings, and when I think about some libraries in which some of the great books are still preserved, and I have specifically one image in mind, Merton College Library at Oxford, one of the first libraries. It was established in 1453 or something, and there are some 14th century and 15th century volumes still chained as they were to the wall. And when you look at it, you thought, my goodness, how poor they were. They had some 40, 50 books all chained, big volumes. However, when you look at the content, there was Aristotle, there was Aquinas, there was Plato, there were the greatest books you can have together. And consequently, the volume was small, but the content was great. And I think that when printing came about, it was the Bible and the greatest book that were ever written that went into printing. And consequently, it was the distribution of wisdom, not mere information.
Yeah, the book is not wisdom. The book is that device through which wisdom is distributed. The question was, is the electronic technology evil as in context of the technology of the printing, which is good?
Well, I don't know whether it's evil, and I deliberately restrain myself from using those loaded terms, technology is bad, electronic media evil, and all that.
But since we have a little time, we might as well be clear about it.
Okay, let's be clear about it. I have always said, and I insisted, that there are certain values built into those technologies, built into this media.
Yeah, it's sort of Maclean-esque. The media is the message.
No, they are built into them, but and express the weapons and scale of values of the dominant culture, and one has to be very careful when one says, well, actually, it is neutral, it is value-free, it can be used by anybody for any purpose. For if you find that invariably there are only certain purposes, certain goals, certain values that are being distributed with it, you must really then question your assumption that it is neutral and value-free. You must really ask yourself whether it is not in the nature of the tool that being devised by a certain...
But take the book. The book was an instrument for the very knowledgeable and the very privileged to carry on the knowledge. And the peons were looking at cathedral glass windows and they were told that the books were saying this, this, and this. So it was a monopolizing, in a way of going about transferring knowledge and so on. So, maybe you could say, well, the technology of the book at the beginning was that, but that doesn't mean that the book was a way of more monopolizing knowledge. And you could say the same thing for the technology of the
economy. At first, it was certainly used to monopolize knowledge, and there was a division between those who could read and write and those who couldn't. And this was the class division and then every possible division. And I think I was a bit cautious and cagey because with books, like with other cultural artifacts, they have many layers. And the answer is not as simple, because on the one hand, like the cathedral, it was, a way of somehow coercing people to accept dogmas of the church. Here it was, the grand law of God. But on the other, it was a very thorough, subliminal kind of aesthetic and transcendental spiritual education. And I cannot say that the cathedral was just a tool of domination of the, and the oppression of the people, which it was. But the transcendental purposes that were built into it somehow transcended.
The parallel was between the book, which seems to be acceptable, and the electronic device, which seems to be less acceptable.
I don't know whether I can find the book acceptable nowadays.
Well, if you look at the history of the book, though, through 400 years or so, I think you would agree with the idea that it's brought to us information and knowledge and dispersed viewpoints and so on, and generally speaking has been a constructive force. Wouldn't you think that? That the invention of printing and so on has brought, overall, a constructive force.
But I am in a rebellious spirit this evening, and so I can doubt and express my assertion against any propositions which seem to be obvious. But I think we should let the audience talk, because they came to express their wisdom.
We have only a few more minutes, unless we want to go quite late in the evening, which means also getting pretty cold. So maybe another
question. It's going to take us 3 minutes to set this up. So
let's have at least three voices from the audience, so that they will straighten them up, straighten us up.
I have a question to ask. Paolo said that the cosmos or whatever is moving towards a state of perfection. But earlier, in an earlier discussion with our seminar, you said that the universe is not a stable or a steady state, which is static, but it is a dynamic process.
It's not a being, it's a becoming.
It's becoming, right. But if and when this state of perfection comes about, this would be a static state, would it not? I mean, it wouldn't be dynamic anymore. It would be stopped, we stopped there and wouldn't go anywhere.
Well, yeah, it depends what we you get there. The model would say that at the beginning there is a being which is utterly dumb, and a being which is utterly blind, utterly knowledgeable, utterly loving. So that would be.
May I become very practical for a moment and ask you your evaluation of your city? Is your city doing what you visualized you wanted it to do? Are they spirits that come to you to try to become more spiritual, less material? Do they truly show, by spending time with you here, the elevation of their spirits, the lessening of interest in themselves, the community, the communication idea? How do they feel about this?
The problem there is that the city is not here.
No, but they are all
yes, the assumption that I'm going by is that the instrument, the technology, is very, very essential. And if you don't have it, you cannot operate. If I am this end, I will not be able to do what this end with what I can do with this end. Out of the question, I need this hand in order to do what this hand can do. And here we have a few scattered buildings. We don't have at all. Yes.
Yes,
but really, with that condition, which is not the one we would like to have in order to be able to test the premises. It's like saying that we get married and we conceive, we would like to imagine what the baby we are going to make is going to behave 20 years from now. Well, we can imagine, but we don't have the performance, so we cannot really say the baby is doing this and this and this. The baby will try to do this and this and this, but since it's not there, for the moment we are, the best we can do is to conjecture and try to be fairly sensible in our conjecture. Back to the prophecy that could become self-fulfilling. Now I don't pretend to to prophetize, but it's in the same kind of frame of reference. If you believe enough in something and you struggle enough to realize this something, this which is an hypothesis could become a reality. And science, it tends to accept that now, because there are statements from science that are more or less saying the same thing. Truth is not so much what is there, but what we are going to will by our action.
Truth is our will, ladies and gentlemen.
There's a couple of people who helped this production. I'd like to thank now Kathleen, the Cafe Palestina, our guests. In charge here, Henrik will object if you can call it a guest. Thank you. And the people who built this building, some of whom are, thanks.